So when we think about candida, which is a fungus that can imbalance our large intestine, but if you are very immune compromised, it can actually become a systemic disease, which could be life-threatening. Also, when we think about candida, when we think of other mold exposures and mycotoxins, mold toxins, then again, we also need to be very specific about where in the body is this problem occurring. And so we have mycotoxins that can infiltrate the lungs. We have mycotoxins that can infiltrate through the blood and be end up in our nervous system. So it's actually not, it's not really the mold that we have to get rid of. It's the impact of the mycotoxins that cause damage. And so when we think of detoxing from candida, for example, the first thing that we want to do is use some kind of a treatment that will decrease the population of candida in our gut. And so one of the best ways to do that is increase the healthy bacteria in the gut, which compete in a ecological way with the fungus. And then you can also use antifungals. So some simple things are like raw garlic is a great antifungal. Golden seal is a great antifungal. And then some of the fatty acids also inhibit the reproduction of fungus in the gut. The most molds are really love sugar. And so in order to have a really effective detox for any mold or mold toxin problem, you have to really lower the amount of sugar and sweets in your diet. And so you have to really eat a low glycemic, low carb diet to really have a long-term, really important solution. And then if you're diabetic or if you have metabolic syndrome and your blood sugar tends to be higher and your blood insulin tends to be higher, then that's going to make it harder to detox any kind of a mold or a candida. And so you have to really, really get your blood sugar control handled. Otherwise, you just have fuel available to grow the molds and the candida at all times. Now, mycotoxins also are found in the bile. So some of the treatments are things that promote bile flow. So we have herbs like chelidonium or very simple things like olive oil and lemon, which promote bile flow. And we have in Chinese medicine, we have herb formulas like Shugan Tong that are improve the flow of the bile and the circulation in the liver. So that's really important to detoxing the mycotoxins. You also should really do a thorough exam to see what kind of mycotoxins you have. And those are typically urine tests that look at the metabolites of mycotoxins. And so some mycotoxins are actually carcinogenic. And so like the black mold toxin is carcinogenic and can actually damage your kidneys. So before you start any detox, you really want to get as much information as you can about what kind of exposure you've had. And then if we're talking about mold exposures in the environment, you have to cleanse your environment. You have to solve the problem in your home or your workspace or the building that you're in, because you'll just keep getting re-exposed. And so it's very important to solve the environmental problem if you have a leaky pipe or a dampness somewhere in your home, then you have to sometimes open up the walls and solve that problem until you really can go back into that environment and not be re-exposed. So it could be a big production. And there are companies that are very good at analyzing what type of molds and what the source of those are so that you have a long-term solution. Cholestyramine is a prescription drug that works through the bile also and will absorb mycotoxins. In and of itself, it's not really a toxic substance, so it can accelerate the resolution of mycotoxin challenges. So again, my message about any detox program is the more analysis you have about what your individual challenge is and what type of toxin it is you're dealing with, then you have a more precise treatment, then you're going to get better results.
when we're dealing with living organisms like candida and fungus and mold and other things, these are biotoxins. So not only are they, so when you deal with like a heavy metal, you got a heavy metal that's an inert substance that you absorb somehow and is floating around in the bloodstream, and and it can get pushed into the tissues. Biotoxins are different. They're trying to find a place to raise a family, you could say. So they're trying to find a healthy environment to reproduce. Typically, your blood is not a healthy environment to reproduce. It's pumping through there at a certain rate. It's trying to raise a family on a busy highway. It doesn't work. So they want to get across the vessel wall into the tissue where it's quieter, where they can start making babies. This is where we have problems. So if we're dealing with a candida infection, it wants to get into an environment that is conducive to its growth. All these different organisms have different temperatures that they're more conducive to growth in. And that's where you notice candida infections, different places in our body. Candida can be systemic. It's not just so much a vaginal tract or UTI type infection. It can be a systemic infection. So dealing with it, you need to use some different herbals that are going to be beneficial to help balance that. And then as far as detoxifying it, so again, when you're dealing with any biotoxin, you have to kill the biotoxin. And then you have to detoxify the endotoxins. It's just that way when you're dealing with parasites or any living organism. If you're going to kill that organism, you're going to produce waste. And now you have to get rid of that waste. And often it's the waste that can cause immune issues. So those endotoxins can be large enough to cause an immune reaction. And that hyperimmune reaction will cause inflammation. And in the worst case, can cause an autoimmune disease if it's constant. So whenever you're dealing with candida, using an approach to kill the candida as best possible and then to detox it is your best approach. When you're dealing with mold, you have to be careful of your exposure. So if you're trying to kill mold that has entered your body via exposure in your household, you're breathing it in, it's going across your lung spaces, it's into your bloodstream and into your tissues, and you're trying to detoxify it by using some different herbals for killing mold, different homeopaths for killing mold, and then trying to detoxify it while you're continually exposed to it in your bedroom while you sleep all night, it's an endless loop that you're going to lose at. So you have to look at exposure. Same thing with heavy metals, same thing with any toxins. If you're constantly exposed to the poison at a rate that's higher than your ability to get rid of it, you're going to eventually die. So you have to look at that exposure rate as well. So, but the biggest thing that my recommendation is to make sure, again, those going back at any detoxification procedure, you have to make sure all those pathways are clear. Think of detoxification as a road to get things out of your body. And if there's blockage anywhere along that road, you're not going to get these things out of your body. If you're not eliminating your stool on a daily basis, at least once a day, feeling like you're really getting cleaned out, you're going to be reabsorbing these poisons. If you're not binding these things in the gut, the chance that you're reabsorbing these poisons, especially if your intestinal transit time is a little slow, the chance that you're going to reabsorb this in your gut is really high. And then think of it as your liver is doing a really stealthful job of trying to dump these things into your colon. And if they get reabsorbed in your gut and then circulated in your body, if you can think of it like a cartoon, your liver's going, what the heck? I just got rid of you 2 days ago and now you're back here and I have to deal with this again. These are the things that overwhelm your phase 1, 2, 3 pathways in your liver. Very dangerous. So making sure that you're eliminating is the key component to detoxification. And if you don't start there, you're going to have troubles. But then also when you're detoxing a biotoxin, My biggest suggestion is that you go slow enough that you're not causing an immune reaction. I see this time and time again where a person is trying to kill any type of biotoxin, Lyme disease, candida, mold, and they're using products that are very effective and can kill quicker than their body can get rid of them. They have not yet addressed all these pathways through this roadway to get this out of the body. And you overwhelm your system. You have these endotoxins, these are particulates of these biotoxins in circulation. Your immune system reacts to it, and then you end up with this hyperimmune reaction that can be worse than the disease itself often. And we can refer to those things as Herxheimer reactions that are very unpleasant, that these hyperimmune reactions, a hyperhistamine reaction, and they can be deadly. So you have to go slow in this process. Remembering those channels of elimination, I call them really the seven phases of detoxification. And phase six is that elimination. So you have to be having a healthy bowel movement on a daily basis, at least one. Be better to have three, that you're really cleaning out your bowel. You're feeling like you're really cleaned out. Checking your intestinal transit time. That's key. Eat some corn. Do you see corn in your stool the next day? You should. If it takes 4 or 5 days to see corn in your stool, your intestinal transit time is very slow, meaning the food that you eat today isn't getting out into the toilet for 4 or 5 days. That's not a good thing. That means stool is backed up in your colon. And if anything's backed up in your colon, you're going to be reabsorbing things, poisons, hormones, all sorts of things that your body is trying to get rid of. And that can be, that often is the major cause of health issues. That's why using a binder, some sort of substance that typically stays in the gut. Some binders can cross the gut barrier and help bind things in the blood and things too. But typically a binder is something that typically stays in the gut and will just bind things. Sodium alginate is a good binder. Different fulvic and humic acids are good binders. We use different products with mixture of these binders, bentonite clay and other things that will just grab onto things in the gut and will help carry them into the toilet. That's what we talk about with a binder. Everybody should be taking a binder. And there's all sorts of help that we could give you on if you're not having that proper elimination. If you're not having a healthy bowel movement every day that you feel like you're really cleaning yourself out, you're constipated. And that is maybe the biggest problem with health right there. Because if you're not getting stuff out, it's becoming a part of you. And that's what leads to cancer and all sorts of diseases. And then making sure that your gallbladder is healthy. So getting an ultrasound, looking at your gallbladder, doing a gallbladder flush. Highly recommend that people do that every couple times a year just to make sure your gallbladder is nice and cleaned out. Minimally, using a hot pack over your gallbladder, using a castor oil pack over your gallbladder could be really helpful to help move the bile and to decrease the viscosity of the bile so it will help flow and move out of there. And then looking at the different phases of liver detox. Your phase one, your phase two pathway. We do a full genetic workup so we can look at the genes, because your phase one pathway, really your cytochrome P450 pathway, is how you take poisons in your body and get them to a point where you can conjugate them in phase two to be able to make them water soluble so that you can put them in the bile, and the bile then carries them into the colon. So those are all controlled by enzymes, and the enzymes are all made by specific genes. So looking at the genes, I have a lot of detox. If I have a lot of defects on my cytochrome P450 genes, I'm going to be a slower detoxer, and that becomes an issue. So these are the different roadblocks that you want to address and support those defects if I have them, support those pathways if they're blocked because of past alcohol use or past, you know, toxin exposure or fatty liver disease, that will help you get rid of things that you're trying to get rid of. Everybody thinks they want to get rid of stuff in the cells. Well, that's great. But if you don't clear that roadway, you're never going to get rid of it in your cells. You could take a chelator and you could pull it out of the cells. And if it still can't get through phase one detox because it's so backed up, it's just going to be dumped somewhere else. And you're going to make yourself sicker. So clearing that pathway so those things can get out, preparing the way of the toxin, you could say, its flow out of the body is the key component.
So let's talk a little bit about the fungal kingdom and the greatest offenders to our health. So let's first talk about mold, because mold is everywhere and mold illness is getting more and more and more prevalent. And we're really trying to understand it more. I think that that's what's happening, that for so long, people didn't know what this constellation of symptoms was due to. And now we're having great insight into mold illness. So mold is everywhere and everyone is exposed to it. However, 25% of us lack the enzymes necessary to clear mold. So you can live in a home with four other people and you can be the only one affected by the mold in that home. And so don't allow people to discount your symptoms. Don't allow people to normalize your symptoms. If you feel like there's something wrong, because we are not meant to feel badly. So there are some things that are associated with mold illness that I look for, but in general, these are these things that are indicators of you are overly toxic. So this is all about what this module is about. It's about detoxification, what this course is about. It's about detoxification. And mold is a major, major toxin for 25% of us. So when we're talking about mold illness, we need to think about two things. We need to think about the source, and that's where it's coming from, be it our homes, our offices, our cars. And then we need to think about the impact that it's having on our body and which toxins are being generated. And once we do that investigation, once we figure out the source, we get rid of the source and we remediate our home, our office, our car. And sometimes for some people, they can remediate their house. And sometimes for some people, they have to move. Because if you are one of those people that cannot clear the toxins, then you have to stop putting them in. Now, mold remediation in the body is a combination of getting things to bind up those mold toxins, and that's different depending on which mold toxin you are exposed to, and using or things like herbs and a combination of herbs in order to get rid of the organisms. And like any other detoxification process, slow and low is the key. Because as you start to clear those toxins, your symptoms can actually be exacerbated. So slow and low is the key. Using binders in a way that is helpful to you, and those binders are pretty specific to different kinds of toxins, and then gently removing those mold organisms from your body. Now, I want to talk separately about Candida, which is yeast. And this is also ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And some people are highly affected by it, and some people aren't. So there is a tremendous amount of inflammation that comes along with Candida overgrowth, and people experience that inflammation in different ways, just like we all manifest inflammation in different ways. But if you are someone who is struggling with depression, struggling with chronic pain, been on diets, can't lose weight, oftentimes, it's because you have overgrowth of Candida in your system. And so getting rid of the Candida requires a multifaceted approach, but it's highly, highly, highly dietary, which almost no one talks about. So changing your diet will make a huge, huge impact on the survival of that candida or not, because candida feeds on sugar. So you have to get the sugar and the things that turn into sugar out of your diet. And in addition, we're using all of those other things that we use for mold because they are part of the same overall family. So we're using binders and we're using herbs to help to kill off the candida. But again, slow and low is the key, because if you kill these things off too fast, if your body is not ready for detoxification, like what we talked about in the previous module, if you are not moving things through your gastrointestinal tract, you're just going to reabsorb those toxins and you're going to feel awful. And I don't want you to feel awful. I don't want you to quit. I want you to feel great, and you should feel great, and you deserve to feel great. So continue to follow along, because usually it's not one thing, right? There are the toxins that we're exposed to. It's not one thing that's causing our symptoms. It's the layering of these toxins. So as you go through these modules, some of these things may resonate with you and some of them may not. However, the overall picture, the overall goal is to reduce the toxins coming in and increase what's going out. And for a lot of people, mold and candida are just complicating the rest of the picture. When we're thinking about how to eat, when we're trying to fight off mold illness or candida or any of those fungal things, we need to remember that what yeast eats is sugar. Now, sugar itself, I think, is fairly obvious to people. I think most people understand that sugar is bad, or bad for them. But most people don't understand all the things that turn into sugar, because there are many things that as soon as we eat them, even though we don't perceive them as sugar, they readily turn into sugar in our blood. And these are feeding the yeast organisms in our body. So when we think about eating in order to reverse candida, get rid of candida, or prevent candida, we need to think about eating a low glycemic, high fiber diet. So we need to think about eating lots and lots of vegetables, and we need to think about eating vegetables that are very high in phytonutrient value. And the way to know that is by looking for color. Color is key. You really want to make sure that you are eating a variety of colorful plant foods. What you want to avoid are the starchy foods, even the plant starchy foods, because they turn immediately into sugar in our blood. And so we are avoiding grains. We are avoiding potatoes. We're avoiding things like bananas. Things that are very high in sugar or starch content, and we are focused on the water-based, low glycemic, very, very colorful plant foods. In addition to the foods that you're eating, you also want to think about certain beverages, because there are certain beverages that will also feed the yeast and increase growth of candida. So you definitely don't want to be drinking milk. You don't want to be drinking beer or wine or these fermented beverages. So while kombucha does have some health benefits in that it's a fermented food, it also has a lot of sugar, and fermented foods are not something that you want to be eating while you're battling candida. Juices are especially high in their glycemic index. So while I don't discourage people from eating some fruit on an anti-candida diet, I do discourage juices of all forms because they are just readily available as sugar. They've had the fiber removed, and so that will only help to encourage the growth of Candida. So in addition to thinking about what you're eating, be conscious of the beverages too, and avoid alcohol, juices, beer, wine, fermented drinks, moldy coffee, moldy tea. These things will only serve to kind of undo what you're doing. They help Candida growth, and these are things that you want to avoid during this time. So when you are looking at your anti-Candida diet, fermented foods are very, very healthy for our gut. And if you're making your own fermented foods, then that's great. But many fermented foods that are commercially available have sugar added to them. So be very mindful when you are eating your fermented foods. Be mindful of the sugar content. And things like kombucha and kefir, which are generally thought of as healthy, are not good in this instance just because of their sugar content. So when you are putting together your anti-Candida diet, be mindful of reading labels. If you're making your own fermented foods, that's wonderful, and you're just not adding sugar to them. But if you are purchasing fermented foods are so great for gut health. Just make sure that whatever fermented foods you're including in your diet don't have sugar in them. So I want you to continue to include fermented foods in your diet if that is something that you typically do. But if you are doing that, just make sure that they don't have any added sugar to them, because that sugar will just complicate your anti-Candida journey.
Our microbiome, our microbiota, it has to be in balance. So those Candida are only going to take over if you give them the environment to take over. Okay, you put the right guys in there, which are policemen, environment, and all that sort of thing in the bacterial world, in the microorganism world, and it'll do it. So you need to replenish your own microbiota. You need to replenish it. And the best way you replenish it is you take good quality microbiota. Now remember, you need to take something that has at least 20 species. Gotta have a lot of species, because you wanna develop an ecosystem, right? Let's say you had a group of friends and you said, listen, let's get out of here. Let's get out of this country. Let's go find a place and make our own world. Well, you're gonna have to make sure you got an engineer. You gotta make sure you got a farmer. You got a teacher. You got a doctor. You gotta bring all the things so that you can have an ecosystem. And it's the same thing with the bacterial world and our microbiome. So microbiota. It needs to have all the different species. So when you're taking a probiotic because remember, you can kill the Candida, but something else, either it'll come back or something else will come in that's also not good, not healthy, pathological, right? Why? Because you don't have the good guys. So you need the good guys. And what's the best way to attract anything? If I want to attract ants in my house, let's say I'm really a bizarre person and I like ants. So I want to attract ants. What do? I just leave some food out. Or flies. Okay, in other words, you put the food and they'll come. So you already got good guys you've got some good guys in your gut, no matter how messed up you are. Start eating right, eating healthy, and you'll find out that they're gonna grow more of those. Yeah, so specifically the diet that would be with the anti-Candida diet, but I don't like to call it that. I like to just call it a healthy diet, you know, because the Western mind loves to label and fractionate and divide and all this sort of, although we have specialists, you know, I'm sure there's a specialty of podiatry which only looks at toenails. I'm sure about it. But I mean, and then actually different parts of the toenail. Are we talking about, you know, so we'll divide anything up. But the point is, so an anti-Candida diet is a healthy diet. So what should you eat? You should eat lots of what we call fiber, but at least lots of vegetables, plant fiber. Okay. Now, when we look at animals, for example, Let's take the herbivores. The herbivores are going to have, like cows, they're what they call front foregut fermenters. You know, like the cow will have multiple stomachs and it sits in there and it ferments and they get a lot of their energy from fermentation. And you notice cows don't do a lot of running around. They're just hanging out. They're hanging out because they need to ferment and they get a lot of their energy from the fermentation. As we all know, fermentation is much less efficient than oxidative phosphorylation, which is what happens in the mitochondria, right? So now then you have the hindgut ferment. And one of our closest cousins, gorillas, are hindgut fermenters. But guess what? All primates have a larger colon than they do small intestine. It takes up a greater percentage, except us. Except us. We're different. Okay. So we're the opposite. We have more. So we're closer to herbivores than to some of the primates. But anyway, the gorilla is sitting around, you want to mess with them? You want to mess with them? You I don't care how much you go to the gyms and you work out. I'll put you up against a pre-adolescent female gorilla. See what happens. You know. So I'm just saying these guys are strong. So and they're getting a lot of their energy from fermentation. So they're eating lots of leaves and stuff like that. The chimps that are swinging around and the orangutans that are swinging around, they have less, but they're still doing it. So what I'm saying is that fermentation. It's a very important part, and we still have it. And the larger the cecum, which is a part of the colon, the first part of the colon, the larger the cecum, the more the animal ferments. Okay, ours is smaller and all that, but we need to get a lot of our energy from fermentation. And I forget the percentage, but it's a significant part that we need to get from fermentation. And the fermentation is carried out by microorganisms in our colon. So it has to arrive in the colon. What has to arrive in the colon? Fiber, foods that we cannot digest. That's what fiber is. If we don't have the enzymes for it, but the bacteria do, right? Because, and also keep in mind, while they are fermenting that, they're producing vitamin K, they're producing other B vitamins, they're producing vitamins and things that we need, right? So that fermentation process, one of the metabolic byproducts are vitamins that we need, okay? So it's very, very important. Well, if you're not eating a high fiber diet, which is just plants, you don't have to eat bran. Eat the salads. What's got fiber in it? Salads, plants, fiber. So eat that. And what do you want to avoid? Because remember, you want to avoid front gut fermentation. Right, which is going to allow the candida to go, which is sugars, and that includes fructose, that includes glucose, sucrose, all of the sugars. So you can't escape it with that. So oftentimes people I've seen on candida diets, they say low glycemic diets. Well, that would mean berries, green apples, the green kiwi, not the yellow kiwi, you know, things like that. But if you really have a problem, whenever you have a problem from it, if you're doing it just for in general, okay. But if you have a problem, go 100%. Just don't eat fruit for a while. Eat lots of plants. Become a gorilla. See, gorillas are different than chimps. Chimps are mostly fruit. Chimps and bonobos are mostly fruit. And gorillas are... that when they can get it, because gorillas don't swing around trees very much. They're big and they hang out on the ground and they eat like that. So, be a gorilla for a while and just eat lots of plants and, you know, and ferment and do all that sort of thing. So that's it. And don't get the sweets, avoid the sweets. And then later on, you've got to take probiotics. So basically that's it, avoiding anything sweet. And also another thing is to remember is that starch, what we call starch is animal fiber. Okay, so we produce starch. So potatoes would have a starch, but we keep starch. We keep a certain amount of starch in our livers as well. But anyway, starch is glucose molecules strung together with these beta bonds. We have an enzyme that comes in and knocks them out and frees up the glucose, and we get energy. Okay. Cellulose is the opposite. It's got the alpha. It's still, but it's still glucose molecules that just got a different kind of bond that we don't have the enzymes for, but bacteria do. So the reason the bacteria are fermenting, they're blocking, they're knocking out that bond, grabbing that glucose and fermenting it. It's the same thing. It's all the same thing. It all very fundamental comes down to that. So when you eat a potato or you eat rice or you eat bread, okay, there's something called the glycemic index and there's something called the glycemic load. Now the glycemic index is when I eat a piece of chocolate and you check my blood sugar and it goes, in 30, 40 minutes, it's fine. It's back down to normal. That's got a high index, okay? You eat a potato, it goes up slowly, but at last, that's the glycemic load. And the glycemic load can last 3 hours. So you got 3 hours, yeah, it didn't go as high, but remember, if my glucose goes up, that means my insulin's gonna go up. And it's that insulin and glucose dynamic that underlies metabolic syndrome X, hypertension, you name it, it's underlying cancer, that glucose insulin dynamic. So you don't want high insulin. One of the most important blood tests I do on people is a fasting insulin, not a fasting glucose, a fasting insulin. And I want it to be 3 or less. Okay, the average American is 12 to 25. Which means that they need a ton of insulin. So anyway, just to keep the sugar, try to keep the sugar, and they still don't, that's still not successful. But anyway, so what I'm saying, so when you're also the anti-candida diet would also be, just eat lots of greens, eat nuts, seeds, right? And just stay away from cooked starches, right? Want to eat a potato, eat it raw. Yeah, he's going to find that hard to do, but you can. You can actually slice them up. We used to do that. We used to make, we'd slice them up and then make almost look like shoestring potatoes. And then we would marinate them in something and it tasted really good. And then I put a pesto sauce on it. And it was almost like a pasta. But you can eat, but raw potatoes aren't really what you want to eat. So anyway, you avoid cooked starches. Don't cook it. If you cook it, you change it, and it now is going to cause weight gain, right? If you stop eating cooked starch, if you have a problem with obesity, just stop all cooked starches. Simple, just that. You're going to find that you're not going to be obese anymore. It's amazing. The beautiful thing about our bodies is that they're extremely plastic. They repair very quickly. Okay, so now remember, when you're going to take probiotics, and I didn't mention this in I'll mention it now, and that is you're going to take probiotics orally, but also take them rectally. And rectally, you can get the probiotics for the colon. And look it up, look online. You'll find what are the bacteria that are healthy for colon versus small intestines, because they're different to some degree, right? Like Bifidobacter bifida, which is very, very, very important for the colon, right? And remember, one of the things that these bacteria are doing when they're fermenting in your gut is they're producing short chain fatty acids. So for example, the Bifidobacter bifidus makes a short chain fatty acid called butyric acid, which is necessary for our colon to live. And it also stimulates apoptosis. In other words, after 3 days, every colon cell is told time to die and replace yourself. And when that doesn't happen, you get growth and you get tumors and things like that. So anyway, by putting in rectally every night when you go to sleep, you can't put it in during the morning because you're going to be active, but you make a little, so you get some, the powder, you put it into a little cup, and you put in a little bit of water, not a ton of water, a little bit of water. You mix it up real good, not water from the tap, water that you would drink like that. And then you can get a syringe. What we give our patients is a syringe with a Foley catheter. So you can go maybe go to like, I think CVS and Long's, and they do have like medical supply divisions. You can go there. The Foley catheter is the one that goes in, you put it into for urine to come out, right? Right? So it's a piece of rubber that's this long, it's got a hole on it. You can get it and cut it off here and then put that on the edge of a syringe. So what you do is you draw the probiotic up, you put it on that. And then when you lie down at night, when you're going to go to sleep, you put it in, right? And then you got to undo the syringe, pull up some water, and then squirt it through again, because a lot of it will be stuck in that little rubber tube. Okay, you do that in. Now you're going to be lying down. Even if you get up to pee, you're going to be there at least a few hours. And remember, it's only 1 hour for bacteria to have a new generation. So you're gonna get those guys in. You're gonna be taking it orally. You're gonna be eating that healthy food. Yeah, 3 months, you're gonna be fine. You're gonna be fine because you're taking probiotics. You're not feeding these guys anymore. And you're gonna do the other things too. What else is anti-candida? Getting a healthy, strong immune system. Getting healthy. So what are you gonna do? You're gonna go to bed early. What are you gonna do? You're gonna make sure you're moving about every 90 minutes. Whatever you're doing, get up and spend 10 minutes of moving around so that your body is. You know, so anyway, there's a whole way to change your life. It's not just about diet. And then the main point is you don't have to do anything. You put the right guys in there, you make the right conditions, and it will reassemble itself into a homeostasis.